Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I'd like to welcome all of you back to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. For some reason, I could not call in on my normal Skype call-in for some reason. I'm going to have to contact Blog Talk Radio and figure out what the problem is. I hope this sounds acceptable. I think I got a listener I wanted to say hello to, Peter Bristol from England, who I think might have just dropped out. It's hard to say. Hi, Barbara. Hi, Eve. Thanks for showing up, guys. I'm going to be covering the Billy Meier case tonight, and I know that's not a surprise to anyone. Going to cover some interesting stuff this evening. I wanted to start out again with Billy's spiritual experiences when he was a child. I know I talk about this way too much, but Billy grew up in northern Switzerland in an area called Bulac. He was living in a town called Niederflux, and that was in the Glatt Valley. And about 3 a.m. one morning on a mild night in May, I think it was in 1941, he went outside and he sat down on a bench and he looked up at a beautiful sky and he said, he heard a voice in his head that said, "My life is made out of the love of creation." And he heard his own voice say, "Since ancient times, you've lived among the stars." And then he knew what his mission was and what his purpose on this earth was. And he got something that he called impulses, which later he recognized as the impulses from the storage banks. You see, our universe has storage banks that are archives, kind of like archives of a library. But we have in the universe stored information. And we have something within the human spirit form that can recognize these impulses that come from these storage banks. And one of the things that Billy said, as a very, very young boy, he said he recognized the light which the stars emitted, but that there was a light he could see in the visible spectrum, but he sensed another light, which he called the light of true love, which remained invisible. And that light of true love was the love of creation. And he could see the beaming stars, which stirred in him this unfamiliar longing for this vast distances and faraway worlds. And again, he heard this voice in his head, and he also even spoke, that said, "Since ancient times, you've lived among the stars." And he knew at a very young age, Billy knew at a very young age, that everything that exists in the whole universe is a manifestation of the might and the infinite and true love of the mighty universal consciousness. And this is much different than our religion's notion of God, because the universal consciousness, the creation, is genderless. It's not a heavenly father. It really doesn't look out for you the way that the religions teach there's a heavenly father out there. I mean, if the volcano erupts or the earthquake starts, the good and the bad are killed regardless. So we're kind of put into the material existence, and although we can get assistance if our thinking is right. You see, if you have neutral, positive thinking, you do get help, so to speak, from the universal consciousness, and we can talk about that a little bit more. Billy, back in 1945, he started to get these telepathic messages, and so did the pastor Rudolf Zimmerman, which was Billy's pastor. Billy's pastor was a Protestant pastor. So it was very interesting that Billy and Pastor Zimmerman started to get these telepathic contacts at the same time. It was about this time that Billy had his first sighting, his first daylight sighting. There was a 200 to 300 meter disc, a huge disc, which hovered over the 75-foot-meter tall Reformed church steeple there near the town he was living on. So it wasn't shortly after that that Billy started to get these telepathic messages from Svoth, and young Billy would go out into the Horrigan Forest, and out of the sky would come this strange-looking silvery pear-shaped craft, and out would step Svoth, who looked like he was wearing something like a diver suit. Svoth would take Billy high up into the atmosphere in this craft, literally up into Earth orbit, and Billy could see these small screens on the ship, and Svoth was observing many people on the Earth at this time, and Svoth started to transmit knowledge to Billy. And at one point, Svoth put a device on Billy's head to open up some of the abilities of his former personalities. This device caused Billy to feel very unusual forces penetrating into him. And then Billy could start to see events that would take place in the future. So Svoth explained that to Billy, that he was awakening the abilities that Billy had in his former lifetimes and that Billy had developed in previous lifetimes that would help him during this very, very difficult mission that Billy was on. Billy's first contacts with Svoth occurred on February 3rd, 1945, at about 10 minutes after 12. Svoth was at that time an extraterrestrial man. He was about 1,000 years old. And he started to teach Billy about the difficult life that he would have, about the fact that his friends would turn against him, people would try to kill him, his wife would turn against him. And Billy had a difficult time growing up. He was very wise for his age, and adults would come to him because he had his words had this tremendous vibration of inner power and modesty and love for human beings. And Billy had a very inspirational kind of power. His real name is Edward Albert Meyer, and Edward means guardian of the treasure. And the treasure that Billy is the guardian of is something called the spiritual teachings. And the spiritual teaching is intended to transform the human beings of the world, to awaken the human beings of the earth out of their deep sleep. And eventually it's supposed to bring a worldwide movement that will bring peace, love, freedom to human beings of the world. Now, Billy was told by Svoth that he would have a difficult life, that he would lose his left arm in an accident, that there would be many attempts on his life. Svoth taught Billy to do something called spiritual telepathy. And using this spiritual telepathy, Billy was able to pull information out of a spiritual plane called Arahat Atharasata. And Arahat Atharasata is talked about a little bit in Contact Report 228. Just to give you a super, super quick review, there are seven steps of human evolution. The first is primitive, the second is rational life, the third is intelligent life, the fourth is sometimes called real life, the fifth stage is life and creational wisdom. This is where the person becomes the king of wisdom or the Ishwish. The sixth stage is sometimes called the stage of the high council, or it's a stage where you start to lose the physical need for a body. And humans at this stage are half spiritual and half physical. Now, the final stage is the spiritual plane, and we're in this spiritual plane for many, 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 many years, billions of years. And the beginning of this spiritual plane is called Arahat Athrasada. And Billy was given a question. When I consider the Arahat Athrasada level, then indeed the spirit forms which are there must actually have insignificant to larger differentiation stages of evolution, somewhat like humans, only with very much finer gradations. So therefore, do its spirit forms, which have still not been long in the Arahat Athrasada level, have the lowest evolutionary level? And do these spirit forms, which stand shortly before the passage to the next plane, have the highest evolutionary level? And Billy says, yes, that's right, because the evolution is an infinitely variable development of learning and cognition, as well as the acquisition of true love, knowledge, and wisdom. And that's one thing that the Meyer material, going back all the way to Semyase, talks about love and wisdom going together. And one of the things that Semyase said in the spiritual teaching was that wisdom and love go together, and that the creation and its laws are wisdom and love at the same time. And the purpose of our life is the evolution of our consciousness, but it's also to grow in this form of love. So anyway, Billy continues here. And this process is granted to all coarse matter life forms, as well as to all the domains of the spirit forms and the pure spirit energy levels. Consequently, there are in every we form, either material or spiritual, lower or lowest, respectively, higher or highest evolutionary stages. So there's something called a we form. Now, a we form you could call, for example, the collective subconscious. Humanity is supposed to have a collective subconscious, where, for example, sometime a person on one side of the world will invent something, and a day or two later, another person on the other side of the world will invent that same thing. And that's part of this, this collective subconscious. But anyway, Billy learned spiritual telepathy, which enabled him to pull information out of this spiritual plane called Arahat Athrasada. This is a spiritual plane that we're all supposed to eventually end up in after many, many years of evolution. Arahat Athrasada, it's the first level where pure spirit forms dwell, and it takes billions of years to evolve into this level of life. Arahat Athrasada means the precious one who contemplates the time. Before Arahat Athrasada, we evolved to a point where we no longer require a material body. So this is interesting that this level exists. But Billy was warned by Thoth about the current time, which is an epoch of great destruction and annihilation, which began, believe it or not, with the criminal conduct of us Americans when we dropped atomic bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. And this is a very unfortunate thing, which started ended World War II, but became this third millennium that we exist in. Now, one of the important things to keep in mind is there have been, on Earth, seven incarnations of the Meyer spirit form. And these are the material lives here on Earth of the Meyer Spirit Form, some of them. I think there are actually others. One, the first was Henoch, who we call Enoch. The second was Eliah, who we call Elijah. And the third is Yeziah, which we call Isaiah. Then Jeremiah, and then Emmanuel, and then Muhammad, and then the person that we call Beam, B-E-A-M. And it's very interesting, since we're kind of studying the spirit form today, I really like to quote this one particular passage from Emmanuel, when Emmanuel said, "The body and the spirit are not a duality, but the body actually comes from the spirit, and it's just a much finer form of matter." And I've always thought that was fascinating. In other words, the Meyer material explains that the spirit form and everything that is material comes from the spiritual realm. So everything that we see in the physical, everything that's alive, whether it's a tree, a bird, a dog, a cat, a horse, any kind of plant, has a spirit form. And the spirit form comes from the spiritual realm. And the spiritual realm exists in the same dimension that we do here on the earth. I mean, in the same physical location, but a different dimension. And what we do through these millions of years of incarnation is move from the physical into the spiritual. And in the spiritual realm, we don't take our physical body. In fact, we take the material consciousness and our spirit form. And the material consciousness goes into an area called the overall consciousness block. And what happens in that overall consciousness block is all the information from your previous life is distilled down to its essences. So what you learned in terms of logic and discernment and love and patience and things like that then gets stored in the spirit form, and it strengthens the spirit form. Well, it also becomes part of these universal storage banks, and it gets placed down into the the subconscious mind. So this is where your past life memories are. Now, at this particular point in our evolution, we really cannot access those memories, but they kind of impulse us, they kind of guide us, they help us as we move through life, and we grow back up again. Now, there's an interesting chapter in the book of Emmanuel, or the Talmud of Emmanuel, and where Emmanuel talked about the human being in creation as they were moving in this caravan. And he said that human beings should look upward to the stars for majestic peace and grander rule there. As though by immutable law and order, the infinite and the everlasting changes take place there over days, months, years, and beyond for centuries, millennia, and millions of years. Human beings, however, should also look downward upon the earth, for there as well is the creational activity and the endless becoming and passing away of life and existence toward ever newly developing forms. So, and this is what I'm talking about, is this movement from the physical into the spiritual and then back into the physical. It's this cycle, this beautiful cycle of life that's talked about in the Goblet of Truth. There's this beautiful passage, which I always quote. It's called, the title is What the Truth Knows to Say. And it says something along the lines of rivers, stones, plants, birds, trees, everything that crawls and flies on the earth is a life form with a spirit form. And these spirit forms are on a journey through time, which involve many, many lifetimes. And that death is just the passage to rebirth into the world of pure spirit. And many of these creatures are connected by psychic vibrations. Now, the psychic vibration is called the swinging wave, which sometimes produces tremendous power. Now, the swinging wave comes from what's called the electromagnetic realm of life. And when we get high enough in our evolution, we can actually harness the swinging wave. We have something in our spiritual consciousness called the Gemut, which is controls the thoughts and feelings of our spiritual consciousness. It also harnesses these swinging waves. And my theory is the swinging wave is how the quote-unquote gods of old, these tremendously powerful extraterrestrial humans, when they were on the earth in a visible form, how they could do all these tremendous feats, because they had learned the incredible power of the human spirit, of these swinging waves. Now, the human being of Earth, we have adopted the unpleasant habit of using false word concepts for things and matters which we don't understand, or that we only partially understand. Sometimes we talk about spiritual illness, for example. Well, in truth, the human spirit is invulnerable. It can neither be sick, nor confused, nor disturbed, nor deranged, or faulty. If there is any kind of insanity, it's related to the material consciousness. The spirit form cannot become confused, deranged. The spirit itself, remember, it's a minute part piece of creation and cannot be negatively affected by anything in the material realm. It cannot be nourished from out of the material realm. It's called the untouchable spirit, and it represents a purely creational product in its form and power, as well as in its swinging wave. And I was talking about this electromagnetic swinging wave, which is described in the teaching of the spirit as these periodically build up electronic and magnetic fields. They're not bound to any matter, but nonetheless they include energies and forces which can be of immense might. So we have a spiritual consciousness and a material consciousness. And when you die physically, they both leave the body and they go into the spiritual realm. And that's where the material consciousness is processed, so to speak. And that's where we get the information for the evolvement of the spirit form. So I wanted to continue here with Emmanuel. He's walking in this caravan, and he's telling people to look up at the stars and pay close attention to them. But he states that mankind in the future will forget to seek the truth, knowledge, love, respect, love, logic, true freedom, and wisdom. And in the future, they will not live peacefully with one another, and they will have a battle cry for warfare, and they want to attain power through violence. And, of course, we live in that time now. It's called the third millennium. And I just read that passage where Svath told Billy that it's the criminal conduct of the Americans who dropped the atomic bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki that started this age that we live in. It's an age of confusion and maliciousness. Our leaders are megalomaniacal at this time, and they will try to take away our rights of self-determination. And the power of the electronic media is incredible today. And you will see people stirred to violence and anger by the media. Keep watching it. You're seeing it continually fanning the flames of racial hatred. Anyway, let me continue with what Emmanuel says here. But when they believe they have power in their hands, They will use it for enslavement and bloodshed, exploitation, brutality, crime, and degeneration. They will speak of honor, freedom, and knowledge. But in truth, these will only be hypocrisy, coercion, and erroneous teachings. And that's what we have today, erroneous teachings. Now, as a side note, the Pleiaron, they left the Earth in 1995, and that's when they revealed their true identity. Now, these Pleiaron, they do not live in our Pleiades. They are some 80 light years beyond our Pleiades. They live in a different space-time configuration. Now, between 75 and 86, they had extraterrestrial bases on the Earth. But now that they've left, all these bases, they're closed up, and they're gone. Do we know exactly why? We don't know exactly why. I wanted to talk a little bit more about Emmanuel and what his teachings about creations were and what his teaching about reincarnation was. Now, one thing that I think is so interesting is that Emmanuel said that creation is not perfect. And I think that this is so important. Why? Well, one of the challenging things I think it's important to understand is that our religions say there is a Heavenly Father who is perfect, who is immutable, he's all-powerful, he's all-knowing, etc., etc. The Meyer material says there is a universal consciousness, a genderless spirit, a neutral positive entity that is evolving. It has incredible wisdom and power, but it's still evolving. It's still learning. It has created a universe which is not perfect. Now, religion tells us the world is not perfect because of sin. No, the world is not perfect because the creator, this universal consciousness, isn't even perfect. The universal consciousness evolves. I'll point out one of the, even though the incredible splendor of nature, the visible love of creation is the incredible splendor of nature. It's, nature is a beautiful thing, but you can see one animal eating and killing another. That's an example of the imperfection of creation. And that's what it says here in chapter 34 of the Talmud, that it appears to be perfect by human creation, but it is not so. Since creation is spirit and thus lives, even it must forever perfect itself. We are in the first stage of evolution of our universe, this creation. It is 46 trillion years old. It's still in its expansion phase. It will expand for about 150 some trillion years, and then it will contract for the same amount of time. The universal consciousness learns. Our spirit forms learn. Our spirit forms learn through each reincarnation. Now, how is it said here in the Talmud? It says, the newly generated spirit is a part of creation itself. However, it is unknowing down to the smallest iota. So a brand new spirit form, it's like a clean slate. It doesn't know anything. The spirit form, it lives in an area of the middle brain called the superior colliculus. And it comes in 21 days after the sperm fertilizes the egg. Every human has a spirit. The spirit does not die. It does not sleep during the deepest sleep. It records all of our thoughts, all of our emotion. It will even inform us when our thoughts are not correct, if we learn to pay attention to it. The spirit is a creation of the universal consciousness. And the reason it creates human spirits is to help the creation evolve to a higher level. You play a role in the creation evolving to the higher level. The spirit is sometimes called the spirit form. It's indestructible. It's eternally living. It's a loving entity. It's always developing. It resides in our human brain in an area called the superior colliculus. It remains mainly in the frontal cerebral cortex. The German word for spirit form is Geistform. And it says in Contact Report 10 that the spirit within the human is the bearer of the creative realm. And every human has their own spirit. So this superior colliculus, it refers to a rostral bump on the lateral part of the midbrain. So this is the portion of the central nervous system that's associated with our vision, our hearing, our motor control. It is associated with our eye movements. Science has studied this area of the brain, but they do not understand that the spirit form resides there. One of the things that I talked about before is Contact Report 11. And that one of the problems we have here on the earth is that we are dominated by what's called the material intellect. And we have a tremendously slow development of the spirit and the spiritual consciousness. The humanity on the earth ignores the deepest intuitions of the human spirit. This is one of our big problems. Now, we do have this universal consciousness. It is a neutral, positive entity. I wanted to say just a little bit about what it means to be neutral, positive, and the importance of neutral thinking, neutral, positive thinking. This comes from the Might of Thoughts, and it explains that we have two powers that go together, called the neutral, or called the negative and the positive. The negative and the positive must exist together. They must never be separated. They are two powers that belong together. So in our thinking, we should always work to be neutral positive. The negative and positive are two powers which belong together and always work together and never allow themselves to be separated because one is dependent on the other. So your thinking is not really supposed to be weighted towards the positive. It's supposed to be a neutral positive. If you feel yourself becoming negative or becoming too positive, this state is called a Sartung in the German. And it leads to the person no longer being in control of the good human nature. You should be using both the neutral, the negative, and the positive in your thinking. If you don't, you will fall out of control of the good human nature. Neutral positive equalized thinking means that both the negative as well as the positive must be included in your thought patterns. You have to tend both of those. So try to meditate on that. That's a very profound thing. You should not be solely positive or solely negative in your thinking. You have to maintain this balance. All of the earth, all of the world, all the universe tries to maintain a balance. That's why water seeks a level. Okay, let's talk again a little bit about the creation. I'm kind of bouncing a little bit back and forth here. I wanted to talk about the spirit form. I wanted to talk about Nocodemian a little bit and Arahat Arasata. The spirit form, it's in our midbrain, the superior colliculus. It's the part of you that survives death. The spirit form becomes wiser, in theory, with each incarnation. Your spirit form, if you're a normal earth human, is about 4 to 5 million years old. It's your material consciousness that is subject to illness, megalomania, haughtiness, but your spirit form cannot be anything but neutral, positive, and balanced. The psyche controls your material consciousness. The psyche controls the thoughts and the feelings of the material consciousness. The Gemu controls the thoughts and the feelings of the spiritual consciousness. The Gemut cannot be influenced by negative powers, negative thoughts. The Gemut can never have negative thoughts. It will only have neutral, positive thoughts. There's something called Gemütsmenschen in the German, which is a human being who radiates equanimity and does not get worked up easily. This is a person that has neutral, positive thinking. So the Gemut, this thing that controls your spirit form, always exhibits equalized harmony. The Gemut supplies the psyche, as I was saying earlier, with these swinging waves, which originate from the realm of cosmic electromagnetic life. The Gemut is not connected to the material body in any way. So this beginning of the book here that I'm looking at is called The Psyche. It's a very good book to get. The first 20 pages of it, I think you'll refer back to again and again and again. I know I have. Very important stuff for sure. Important to get your mind wrapped around that stuff. Emmanuel, who was Emmanuel, in case we got some new listeners out there. And now this is the part of the show where I get to unfortunately insult some people, and I don't mean to. Take all of this with a grain of salt. This is what the Meyer material says. Is it absolutely 100% correct? I think we will know one day. They say the person that we call Jesus today was actually called Emmanuel. And the Meyer material says that the story that we have today is a fictionalized version of a man's life who really existed. And I thought to myself, well, this is very odd. How can there be someone named Emmanuel when the whole world has called him Jesus? And always, I thought he was always called Jesus. Well, that was one of the first things that I learned, which was a stunning thing to me to finally start to learn where the name Jesus came from. First of all, the letter J is the youngest letter in the alphabet. And if you look at a 1611 version of the King James, you'll see the name used, I-E-S-U-S. That was one of the early names before the name became Jesus. One of the people that played a role in the development of the letter J, and let me say this, first of all, there was no letter J in the Old English. So the first versions of the King James Bible came out before the Middle English and the High English. So there was no letter J. So James and John, they have a totally different name. James's real name was Yaaqov, Yaakov or something to that effect. John's real name was Yahuchanon, which we can hardly pronounce those names today, and they did not begin with the letter J. The letter J came about right around 1550 when a guy named Gian Giorgio Trissino, who was a scholar, an Italian guy who knew German, started to play with these fancy letter I's. And eventually, the letter I kind of morphed into the letter J. Now, the letter J didn't exist in the Hebrew and the Greek and any of these ancient languages either. So something happened right around 1600 where they went back and they started to substitute the I's with the letter J. And we came up with names for the apostles that we could pronounce easier. Instead of Yaakov, we called him James. Instead of Yahochanan, we called him John. And instead of Iesus or Isus or the Meyer material says he was originally called Emmanuel, we started calling him Jesus. Now, people will say there was a transliteration from Yeshua into Jesus. This is a logical argument. They say it went from Yeshua in the Hebrew to Iesus in the Greek to Isus in the Latin. Those two spellings are very close. And then finally, into the word Jesus that we use today. Now, this floored me, the fact that we allowed all these people's names to be changed. There was no book of Job. Originally, it was the book of Iob. So, for whatever reason, they went in and they changed all these folks' names. So, it becomes a little easier for me to accept that the person that we today call Jesus might have been originally called Emmanuel. If you need a little more proof, there's a whole series of links that I could send to you, throw into the chat room. There's some interesting YouTube articles. Let me throw this particular link in, and this will show you a 1611 version of the King James Bible. And if you click that link, you can see the name Iesus being used. I-E-S-V-S. There was different spellings. That's one interesting link you can check out. So anyway, who knows? I am still neutral. I assume that the Meyer material is correct. I'm going to continue to study this and try to get more information. Another proof from art, if you look in the paintings of the crucifixion, a lot of time you'll see the acronym INRI, which translates into Iesus Nazarenus Rex Iodorium, and which today we call Jesus King of the Jews. But as you can see, Iesus is what he was called during that time, and then I put that link in the chat room as well. So it's very odd the way this has not been talked about in very, very few of our churches. Ever talk about this. So, that's why I call Emmanuel, Emmanuel. Now, there are many things about the story of Emmanuel which are a little challenging. Accordingly, or supposedly, Billy traveled back in time when he met with Asket, and they traveled back to the time of Emmanuel, and they got to meet Emmanuel. Now, I think the jury's still out on time travel. Is that a possible thing? Some scientists say yes. If you can travel in time, then to me that says that everything that has happened is still happening. In a sense, you can go back and visit that time again and experience all those things. Asket was Billy's second contact person. Asket is a woman from the Tao universe. There's a a parallel universe to ours called the Tao universe. It was created about at the same time our universe was, about 46 trillion years ago. And when Bill, in 1955-56 time frame, maybe 54, Billy met with Askett for the first time. And they took a lot of really interesting trips together. The one I was telling you about is their time travel back to Jerusalem. It was called Jerusalem during those days. And they got to meet with Emmanuel. Now, according to the Meyer material, and I like to say that because I can't prove this, Emmanuel is a previous incarnation of the spirit of Edward Albert Meyer. So what happens during these reincarnations is we have different personalities. Our spirit form takes on different personalities and different time frames. So Enoch, Elijah, Isaiah, Jeremiah, Emmanuel, Muhammad are the six prior personalities of Edward Albert Meyer here on the earth. Now, he's also been an individual that today we call Nicodemian. And this is going back, because the Meyer material says the Meyer spirit form is about 9,600,000,000 years old. That means it incarnated in other galaxies and on other worlds and has been teaching this ancient universal teaching for many years. And I had sent a question to Marion Eulinger Mondrian, who works with Billy, and I sent that question about the creation, and she wrote back this, and she mentioned Nicodemian in this letter. She said, the universe, creation, universal consciousness, these are all synonyms. The creation doesn't have a consciousness, it is the consciousness. So that's a profound statement. But of course it doesn't work the same way as our human consciousness, because it's pure spiritual energy, and it works in a spirit energetic way. Our universe has seven belts. Our universal, creational universal consciousness has what's called a material belt. And in the material belt, there is all the matter. That's where the stars, the galaxies, the suns are. It took many billions of years, trillions of years probably, until the first matter came into being. And it took another trillion years until the first humans came into being. And this spirit form, Nicodemian, was one of the first human beings in our universe. And that spirit form has an age of about 9,600,000,000 years old. And Billy is the bearer of that spirit form called Nicodemian. And as far as the spirit forms which are still in physical form, that's by far the oldest spirit form. And there's a person in Switzerland called Bernadette Brand who wrote a book on Nicodemian. And of course, that's still, unfortunately, in German and hasn't been translated yet. Now, there are many human civilizations out there in our galaxy. We haven't come across them yet officially, but they exist out there. The Meyer information says these are highly developed, 2,630,000 highly developed civilizations. And I think there are roughly 7 million total civilizations in our universe. And I talked about the material belt. And you see the overlap of this information. Because there are seven rings in the creation, and what comes in is a spiritual energy, and it's slowly compressed into material, and it lives a physical existence for so many billions of years, and then it moves back into an energetic form. And this is kind of a flow that goes on, a continual flow. This is matter can never be as old as the complete universe, because matter only lasts so long until it goes back into the spirit realm, into the energetic. So when you think about this, you have to recall this cycle. Creation is infinite beauty. It's a beauty above all beauty. Whenever you see anything beautiful, you should trace it back to the beauty of creation itself. And it says in Contact Report 18, it says, whenever he sees something beautiful, be it a flower, an animal, or a human being, or anything else, he thus instantly brings it into association with the infinite beauty of creation itself. So, the more your intelligence is effective in the direction of understanding the creation, the more it gains a radiating light, the more powerful your personality becomes, and the more blessed your entire life and work will become. And we should constantly contemplate the nature of creation. And eventually, you'll start to develop something called the Empfinden, which is a fine sensitive feeling, which starts to be able to sense the radiating love of creation. This is the Empfinden block, the Empfinden. We have an area in our, we have an area called the feeling, which is a block and factor. It's part of the psyche. And the entire block of all feelings and their possibilities encompass vastly many more impulsations than we can understand at our current level of evolution. But feelings are impulsations, and they originate from what's called sensual physical impulses, but also drives, instinct forms, and there are conditions of the personality. Feelings can be primal, unavoidable, and they can also be traced back to what's called the psychic consciousness-based and the purely physical, and it can be related to environmental process as well. So the less advanced a human being is in their evolution, the more they react towards their own thoughts and feelings, and the less they have the ability to control the thoughts and the feelings. I was talking about the Empfinden block, and this is the area by which the feeling world in the half-material psychic realm is influenced and co-formed in the spiritual realm. So the Empfinden block ultimately produces what's called the Empfinden, which is the fine sensitive, when you can start to sense this radiating love of creation. Creation is a neutral positive spirit, and it expresses its love through the splendor of its physical creations in nature. But it radiates love continuously. And when your Empfinden block starts to turn on, you'll be flooded. You'll feel this tremendous influx of energy when you're in nature. And that's why when the kings of wisdom, the highly evolved extraterrestrial humans, were on the earth, they would always take their students out into the forest, out into free nature, because it's the clarity of the consciousness which produces this fine sensitive feeling, which is the sensing the radiating love of creation. Creation can take possession of the consciousness even. So when that happens, your whole thinking will be full of peace, happiness, and strength. And that's why we are told to switch off and avoid the material intellectual thinking. Contact Report 18 says, as well as the switching off of material intellectual thought power, such as egoism, materialism, pride, envy, greed, and jealousy, all of these thoughts, I mean, this sounds like politics today, doesn't it? I mean, that's the way people think. Well, we should be turning off the thought powers of egoism, materialism, pride, envy, greed, jealousy, which only this guarantees the recognition of the creational laws. Now, what are the creational laws? Well, the primary creational law is love, which is an effective love, the love based on the understanding of the oneness of the universe. The other creational law that we've been studying on and off for quite some time is found in the book called The Way to Live, The Art zu Leben, in the German, The Way to Live. Billy describes it this way. The fact of the new time and of the current time is that the human being has also newly discovered the ur-creational law of evolutive striving. Also, the age of Aquarius itself pushes forward with horrendous power and spurs on the striving of the human being. It is the time of the upthrusting truth, which demands intelligence and reason, logic and knowledge and progress. So we are even being inspired by the age that we live in. This is called the age of Aquarius. This ur-creational law of evolutional striving is kicking in. This is the law that pushes you to work harder and continue to work harder. The human being's sense of life is in the striving for that which is higher and more absolutely fully developed. So that is one of the creational natural laws that you need to embrace, the law of striving. If you're feeling depressed, if you're feeling overwhelmed, if you're feeling unhappy in your life, you can almost always relate it to the law of striving. You should redouble your efforts in striving. That may not completely solve all of your negative feelings, but it will help a great deal. Because the more you're striving, the more you're likely to have a neutral, positive thinking process. And the more you have a neutral, positive thinking process, the more you'll feel happy and balanced. So the importance of striving cannot be overemphasized. And there's these creational natural laws which the whole universe runs on, which we always need to be thinking of. Let me read a little bit here more again in this book called The Way to Live. Every single rational individual is born in order to evolve. They are compelled and driven by the creational impulse of the striving for that which is higher, that which is more rational and more absolutely and fully developed. And every single rational individual is integrated into the laws of reincarnation, the laws of rebirth. It is a process of the endless change of oneself and the becoming and the passing away and the becoming again of the reincarnation process. There are so many, infinitely many lives to live in evolutive striving before one day, after 40 to 60 million years, the level of evolution reached through constant striving for that which is higher and more absolutely developed. And in that final stage, you won't need a physical body anymore. Anyway, while we've somehow run out of time, I want to thank everyone that came to the show. You've been listening to Ohio X Politics. My name is Mark Snyder. We should be back on tomorrow evening. Have a great day. Bye-bye.